We continue the Shiur Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan, who was known as the Mara, the Arad Yisrael, which means the chief rabbi of the entire land of Israel, he was originally a student of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Yudan Asi, who compiled the Gemara. Chief rabbi of Israel, the Gemara says about him that he possessed a handsomeness that was far beyond normal. A beauty, handsomeness that is, that went up in the chain back to Yaakov Avinu, Adam HaRishon. And he wanted to use this handsomeness for a purpose. In his desire to help the Jews, the Gemara says that he sat at the gates of the mikveh, the entrance to the mikveh, where women went to the mikveh night. Mikveh night means when a woman becomes pure after being in Edah, she goes to the mikveh to submerge, and then she is pure for her husband. So the Leil Tevilah, the night of mikveh, is a night when the Gemara says most probabilities, the vast majority of cases, that's the night that a woman conceives. So he went and sat at the entrance of the mikveh so that women passing by could see him. They would naturally not just look at him, they would stare at him very intently at his handsomeness. And the Gemara says that when a woman stares at something very intently before conception, that she's going to conceive something resembling that which she stares at. Yochanan said, let me sit here, let the woman stare at me. Of course, it's very important to point out, he, Chas V'Shalom, did not look at them. He did not look at women, that was certain. But he sat there so that they could look at him, and staring at him, they would be certain of giving birth to children that were also unusually good-looking. This was his purpose. Where do we find the origin to this rule? We find that the Parashat says that Yaakov Avinu had made a deal with Laban. He would take his cattle, and only those cattle that were born, that were spotted, speckled, and striped, would belong to Yaakov Avinu. All others would belong to Laban. Now, Yaakov Avinu had no spotted, speckled sheep with him. How could they give birth to spotted and speckled sheep? Torah says that he took sticks, long rods, and he carved out of these sticks spots, speckles, and stripes. He placed this at the watering trough where the cattle came just before mating time. Now, these were such bright colors that the cattle gazed, stared at these sticks, and automatically, when they conceived cattle that were also spotted and speckled. We see that's the nature of staring, a woman staring at something, or a woman or a female, even in the case of animals, staring at something very intently before conception. The birth will be one that resembles that which they stare at. So Rabbi Yochanan said, I sit at the gates of Tevilah, the mikveh, to give Jewish women the opportunity to have children that are as handsome as I am or resemble my handsomeness. The Gemara asks, isn't there fear of an ayin hara? When something is very good, someone possesses a lot of wealth or a lot of good luck, good fortune, there are people who begrudge them this good fortune, and there are people who possess the power of ayin hara, evil eye. So the Gemara says that a person who has something very good, a good fortune, should try to hide it from others, because if they begrudge him, they might look at him, stare with this evil eye, which can harm him. Sometimes this evil eye could prove fatal. Especially the ayin hara, the ayin of a woman who was in Edah. When they were going to the mikveh, they would need that. Their ayin is even more dangerous than the average ayin hara. So how did Rabbi Yochanan take a chance of sitting there And people passing by would say, would declare about his handsomeness and look at it with envy. This could be Ayin Hara, which could be destructive. The Gemara answers, Rabbi Yochanan said, I fear not, told his students, I do not fear the Ayin Hara, because I am a descendant of Yosef HaTzadik, also who possessed this unusual beauty. And Yosef HaTzadik was blessed by his father Yaakov Avinu that no Ayin Hara should be able to have any effect upon him. He should be like the fish in the sea, who are below the waters, beneath the waters, they cannot be seen, the eye cannot rule over them, and so too should he be above the power of Ayin Hara, that no Ayin Hara can harm him. Now what is meant by why specifically Yosef HaTzadik? Why did it work so with Yosef HaTzadik, that he wasn't affected by Ayin Hara? And we find that he wasn't defective even before his father's blessing, which means that he was immune to the Ayin Hara before that. The answer is that Ayin Hara means that a person has a certain mazal. His mazal, his luck, according to the stars, is that he's going to be wealthy, or he's going to be very healthy, good-looking. And then along comes someone with an Ayin Hara, an evil eye, that is so strong, is so evil, that it could overpower even the mazal, above the mazal. However, the case of Yosef HaTzadik, he himself was above mazal. Because what is mazal? What are the mazalot? We speak about mazalot, the signs of the zodiac, set of the stars according to the month, according to the birth of a person, so on, according to astrology. This all depends upon the sun, the moon, and the stars, the position, especially that of the stars. In the case of Yosef HaTzadik, we find that he said, he dreamt, that the sun, the moon, and the stars bowed to him, which means he was their superior. He was not subordinate to them, didn't depend upon the mazal coming from the stars. He ruled over them. So he ruled over his destiny and over his mazal. And therefore, no Ayin Hara could overpower him. In this case, he was completely immune to it. The Gemara says there was a sequel to this point of Rabbi Yochanan's good looks. One day he came to the river's edge to wash there, and he saw, this was at the stream. The stream was pretty wide. On the other side of the stream stood Resh Lakish. Resh Lakish at that time was the leader, the head of a band of thieves. He was extremely powerful physically, and he was feared by every type of bandit and by every type of tribes. They had cannibal tribes in those days. They all feared his strength. So they made him the leader, or the Rav, like the, that too, a case of a rabbi meaning a leader, over these bandits. He stood on the other side of the stream. He saw Rabbi Yochanan here bathing. So he took a leap over the stream, which took tremendous strength and agility. He reached Rabbi Yochanan's side to attack him, or to rob him. Rabbi Yochanan said to him immediately, the famous words, Chelach Leoraita, your strength is remarkable. You should take that strength and use it in the study of Torah. Expend it. Let it absorb yourself in Torah and use all that power for the study of Torah. So the Shlakish very cynically, sarcastically, retorted, you should use your handsomeness, women. Imagine how you'd make out with women with a handsomeness like yours. Yochanan wasn't taken aback by this, and he said to Resh Lakish, I see in you a very great potential for Torah, and I'll give you an offer. I have a sister who is just as good-looking as I am, in fact, much better, being a woman. I'll let you have her as a wife if you promise to come with me, become a student of mine, the study of Torah. This was very tempting. The Ish Lakish accepted the offer. He dropped his connections, association with the bandits. He came, married Rabbi Yochanan's sister, and he settled down to study Torah, and he became extremely sharp. He became the greatest student of all the students that Rabbi Yochanan had. He also became a very great tzaddik. The Gemara says that a great deal of time later, there was a discussion about a certain law. We know that there is a din of tum'ah. Tum'ah means that anything, any article, utensil, which touches a dead body corpse or a dead rodent becomes tameh, impure. And this rule applies only to a finished product, to a utensil, a dish that is complete, any article that's complete. If it is not complete, it's called a golam, which means an item that is not finished, an unfinished item. This cannot become tameh, cannot become impure. Rabbi Yochanan and Ish Lakish were discussing, debating, as to when a sword is considered a finished product. In order to complete a sword that has to be forged, steel must be forged, it must be heated in an oven, it's very strong fire, and then the question is, at what point is it considered a completed item? When can it become tameh? So Rabbi Yochanan said, my opinion, the work on a sword is completed after they have finished placing it into the fiery oven. When you withdraw it in its completed form, then it is a sword that can become tameh. Ish Lakish said it is not yet a completed item because after it comes out of the oven, it must first be placed in cold water to end the process, to tighten the steel, and then it's first a completed sword. So even if it's taken out of the oven and it touches a rodent, it still is not tameh yet because it's not a completed keli. Rabbi Yochanan said to the Ish Lakish, well, surely a bandit knows his own trade. You know better about swords than I do. The Ish Lakish was taken aback. He felt stung by this remark, and he said, so what? What good did you do me, taking me away from my former trade and making me a student or a rabbi here? I was a rabbi before, and today I'm also a rabbi. And what did you help me? Rabbi Yochanan answered, I helped you by bringing you beneath the wings of the Shekhinah. Before, you were a rabbi, you were a leader, but you were very remote, very far from Kedusha, very far removed from the Shekhinah. I brought you under the wings of the Shekhinah. You dare to ask me what I did for you in this case? He turned away, very deeply hurt. Rabbi Yochanan was hurt deeply. This, of course, affected the Ish Lakish. There was an immediate vengeance, punishment, meted out from heaven, hurting the feelings of his official rabbi, hurting the feelings of the leading rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. Ish Lakish became very ill, in fact, fatally ill because of this. Before we go further, we have to understand what actually transpired. What did Rabbi Yochanan mean, and why did this whole conflict come about? The fact was that this was all a very tragic misunderstanding on both sides, because Rabbi Yochanan said to him, a bandit knows more about his own trade, therefore you know more about swords. This was not meant as a slighting remark. It was meant very seriously, with admiration. In all cases, I know Torah, Din, laws better than you. In this case, you've had more experience than I have, so certainly the Din should be like you. The Ish Lakish took this, thinking this was an insult. It was a barb stinging him. So he said, to reply to this, Rish Lakish answered, what did you accomplish for me? Not accomplish, but the word is my ahanedly. In other words, why do you insult me with this remark? You insult me as though saying that I am no better now than I was before. Not that he asked, what is the improvement in being a rabbi here than there? Chas v'shalom, of course, he understood that. He knew that, and he lived up to this title. But he said, why do you make this remark that's so biting and so insulting when you see that I studied Torah seriously? Again, Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood his statement and thought that he meant this literally. I gained nothing by coming with you. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan felt very hurt, and he said, I brought you under the wings of the Shekhinah. You don't appreciate this. He turned away. And because of the fact that he was hurt, though it was a misunderstanding, still Rish Lakish was punished. He could not escape this punishment. He became ill, fatally ill. And Rish Lakish's wife, Rabbi Yochanan's sister, came to Rabbi Yochanan, and she began to plead with him. She said to him, think of my son. Think of myself. My son will become an orphan. I'll become a widow. Yochanan said, I can't help you. I cannot change this punishment. I cannot remove it from Rish Lakish. I can only assure you that I'll just help support you in your status as widow, and your son in his status as orphan. Immediately afterwards, Rish Lakish was nistalek. He passed away. Rabbi Yochanan began to mourn his passing. He felt very badly about this, and he couldn't conduct regular classes. He took this so much to heart that he stayed away from classes from Shiurim in the yeshiva. The rabbis felt very badly. They said, someone has to go to Rabbi Yochanan to pacify him, to console him. So they said, whom shall we send? We'll send Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, because he has the sharpest mind of all these students here. Elazar ben Pedat went to Rabbi Yochanan's shiur. He sat in front of him. Rabbi Yochanan made a statement of halacha. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat said, you're right. This and this page, this gemara, it says exactly as you say. Each item, each statement he made, as I was so well versed in Talmud, the Gemara, that he brought proof to his statements each time. This went on for some time, and Rabbi Yochanan finally said to Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, stop helping me, stop assisting me with your words, I don't need you. How do you ever compare to Rish Lakish? When I say something, you tell me I'm right, the Gemara says like that. I know I'm right without you telling me. So your words are of no avail to me. Compared to Rish Lakish, when I made a statement, he said, I'm wrong. He asked 24 questions, powerful questions against my word. I had to think very deeply to give him 24 answers on each statement. Imagine how the study Torah was broadened by such a discourse, such a conversation. How can you compare to Rish Lakish? I refuse to accept your words or to listen to you further. And he turned away even more brokenhearted. He tore his clothes as a sign of mourning, and he began to cry uncontrollably. His cries were, where are you, Rish Lakish? Now, why did he tear his clothes in mourning now, after so long a period? So long after Rish Lakish had passed away, at the original time he didn't tear his clothes. Now he tore his clothes. The answer is that the Torah tells us there's a law that when a close relative passes away, one of the seven close relatives, that's parents, mother, father, a brother, sister, son, daughter, or mate, his husband or wife, that's seven. Every one of these seven, the Torah states that a person must tear kiniyah. He must rend his garment. On the right side, five relatives, and on the left side, for parents. There must be kiniyah. This kiniyah is so important. This is min d'oraita, min ha-torah. It is more important even than the sitting of Shiva. And it is so vital and so important that it is a shame, a tragic shame, that in our time, this din, not minhag, not custom, but din, has become so lessened in the eyes of so many, become so nullified, as for shalom, that we find that in a vast majority of funerals today, the people refuse to take part in this mitzvah, min ha-torah. It's one of the 613 mitzvot, to tear clothes. In fact, to make things worse, the American custom is, among Reformed Jews, non-religious Jews, or mercenary chapels, that they place a black ribbon, they pin a black ribbon on the garments of the mourners, and they say the beracha, Dayan Emet, and they cut this black ribbon. There's nothing as disgraceful or sacrilegious as that. To vilify a major mitzvah in the Torah. The mitzvah of Kiriyah is the first and foremost mitzvah in mourning a deceased relative. But the Gemara says that this mitzvah of Kiriyah applies also in the case of a student for his rabbi. He must also tear Kiriyah because he is like a father to him. This applies only for a rabbi, not for a friend or a student. Now, originally, when Ish Lakish passed away, Rabbi Yochanan mourned him as a student, or at most as a friend. Later, when he saw Ibn Azab ibn Badad come to him and offer him this assistance, proof of his words, he first realized that Ish Lakish was so great as a student that he had actually served as a rabbi to Rabbi Yochanan, because asking so many questions forced Rabbi Yochanan to penetrate so much deeper into his studies, come up with answers, and thereby learning an additional amount, that he could actually classify Ish Lakish in a sense as his rabbi. And therefore, it was then first that he tore his clothes in Kiriyah. The Gemara says that he mourned so strongly, he cried so much, until it seemed to the rabbis that he couldn't control himself. He had gone beyond the normal state of mind. They were afraid for the state of his mind, and they prayed to Hashem to take him away. Rabbi Yochanan was the stalik after these prayers of the rabbis. Now this shows the true mourning for a Talmid Chacham. The Gemara says that a person who cries, sheds tears over the passing of a tzaddik, the mitzvah is so great that all his sins are forgiven. That's why, again, remember that on Yom Kippur, the first sentence of the Kriyat HaTorah is the story of the passing of Aaron HaKohen's two sons. And there he then says a person should be careful to cry when that pasuk is read, because on Yom Kippur it will help to have all his sins forgiven. We go back now to the continuation of the story of Rabbi Elazar but Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. You recall that we spoke about the fact that Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was appointed as a detective by the Roman government. He was forced to bring in criminals, Jewish criminals, and no matter what crime they committed, the penalty was death. Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha sent Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon a note saying, "You're handing over Jews to their death, criminal act." Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon said, "I want to prove to myself whether I did anything wrong. If I did, then that means that some tum'ah is taking place within me." He performed an operation where he removed fats from his body, placed this fats in the sun where it would spoil, did not spoil at all. There were no worms of any kind that came into it. No worms came into it. This again proves what the Gemara states so many times, that the Torah itself not believes, but dictates the fact that there is spontaneous reproduction, spontaneous generation. A thing can be born without parents, without reproduction at all. There are insects that are born created from dirt or from filth. Science, of course, disagrees with that, as science disagrees with the Torah in general, faith. But here, by placing this fats in the sun, when it gets spoiled, germs or worms are formed. In his case, they remain pure. He says, proves that I committed no wrong, because no worms can attack me, meaning that I am that pure. The Gemara says now that despite this, Rabbi Shimon still felt that there might be a possibility of having done something wrong, and even in the slightest minor degree. He wanted to atone for this act. He decided to take upon himself Yisurin, suffering, self-accepted suffering. These are called Yisurim Shel Ahava, Yisurim out of love for Hashem, to suffer for the sake of purifying himself, even though he is not guilty, does not deserve this type of suffering. Type of Yisurim that the great Tzadikim, the Avot, fathers of the Jews had. And these Yisurim, the Gemara says in Berachot, a person could tell whether his Yisurim are of Ahava or otherwise, if the Yisurim in no way affect his study of Torah or Tefillah. Because if a person is sick where he cannot study Torah or have Tefillah, these are not Yisurim Shel Ahava. Now the Yisurim, Zabbi Shimon took upon himself with a kind where it was internal suffering, and in a sense internal because it was actually external. It was like a type of leprosy where the skin became afflicted and there were pockets of pus that would come out. It was extremely painful. And at night, this all took place at nights, they had to place 60 sheets beneath him to absorb all this waste, destroyed cells that came from him. And of course, this took out a lot of strength from him. In the morning, his wife had to prepare 60 types of food, special health foods, and to regain his strength. He ate this, he became well, but she refused to let him go to the yeshiva to study Torah, so that the pressure of the rabbis there shouldn't make him feel worse, make him more ill. Yemeneh says that at night he would say, "My dear brothers, my dear friends, come to me," speaking to the Yisurim, the suffering. In the morning, he would say to the Yisurim, "Leave me now because I must study Torah, I cannot be bothered." This is the power he had upon his own fate. This went on for a long period of time. One day his wife heard him. She overheard him say, "Come to me, my friends, my dear friends, Yisurim." And she became very angry and said, "He's bringing it upon himself. Why should I nurse him like this? It's his own fault. Imagine the expense we're going through. So much bedding and so many types of food. The money that I have from my father is being wasted upon this unnecessarily." So she became angry and she said, "I'm going home to my father," and she left him. She took her daughter with her. Both went to her father's house. Rabbi Shimon was left alone at home. Now he had a problem. Where would he get someone to prepare the 60 types of food that was so necessary for him? That day, a boat came into shore and they brought with them 60 slaves. They brought these 60 slaves carrying 60 chests of treasures, gold coins, and brought it to the Lazar Rabbi Shimon, and they said, "This is a gift for you." Why did they do this? Because this boat was on a sea, this ship, and a storm came up, was about to sink it. They prayed to Hashem to be saved in the Zechut of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. They were immediately saved, and they vowed to repay him with this gift. Now, he had these 60 slaves to prepare his food and this vast treasure. There was no problem of expense anymore. So he continued his ways as usual. One day, his wife said to her daughter, "Go see how your father is making out without us." So she went to the house, and Lazette told her, "Tell your mother that the treasure I have now is bigger than I had before with her, so she needn't worry about me." Yemena says that he felt better. He decided he had absented himself too long from the yeshiva, so he went to the yeshiva. When he came there, they were very happy to see him because they had many problems. One of the worst problems is the sheilot, the questions of nidah. A woman who's a nidah has to examine and find out if she is still nidah, or she is pure, whether she can go to the mikveh or not. And the questions always are with the ed, the bedikah, a piece of cloth which shows whether she is pure or whether she is still staining. Now the color of that cloth, the color of the stain, must be determined by an expert rabbi who knows colors. There are certain colors that are pure, certain ones that are not. They brought to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon that day 60 of these problems, these shelot. And he examined all 60 and said they are all pure, which means these women can go to the mikveh. They are free, they are pure, and they can rejoin their husbands. The rabbis began to whisper among themselves, "Something is wrong. Can it be that all 60 should be pure? How is that possible? There must be at least a few who are a doubt. A few who are a tameh, or at least a doubt. And if in doubt, you have to be machmir. You've got to consider it impure." He overheard them, he heard them speaking this way. Lazar said to the rabbis, "If I am right, if I was correct in my statement that they are all pure, then let every one of these 60 women give birth to boys. If not, then let there even be one girl among them. If there are 59 boys born and one girl, it'll prove that I'm right, that I was wrong. If all 60 are boys, that means that I was right." It was that every one of them gave birth to a boy, and each mother called this boy, Rabbi Elazar, his name in honor of him. Yemena says that Rabbi Bnei Kadosh said, "What a shame it is that this Roman government, which took Rabbi Elazar away for so many years to serve as a detective, took him away from the yeshiva. What a great loss this was, because women, always in doubt, could not go to the mikveh that day. This means they were deprived of conceiving that possible kosher night. And how many Jews could have been born more if not for this evil Roman government that kept Rabbi Elazar away from the yeshiva?" Later, the Gemara says, finally, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, this was many years after the Mishmur Mi'chayezal's passing, he saw he was going to pass away, Bina Stalek. So he said to his wife, "I know that the rabbis are somehow opposed to me. They resent what I had done previously. Of course, I had been serving as a detective. I had done what was wrong in their eyes. So most probably, when I pass away, they're not going to give me a proper type of funeral with honor, as is fit for me. Not that I want one with honor that much, but I don't want them to be punished for the lack of kavod. Therefore, I'm telling you now that when I pass away, do not have me buried. Place my body upstairs, a special private room, and keep me there without burial. The Yemenis says he was nistalek. His wife did that. He remained up in the attic, in this room upstairs, without being buried for approximately 18 to 24 years, the Yemenis says. It was not less than 18 years, not more than 24 years, 22 years, excuse me. 18 to 22 years, there's a debate as to exactly how long. So it was certainly no less than 18 and no more than 22. This amount of years, he remained up in the attic without being buried. And of course, the first question is, the rule is, the Torah states that a person is not allowed to be kept even overnight without burial, because this does a lot of harm for the person's neshama. So the kavod, the honor for any person who passes away is to bury him immediately. How could they have kept the Bilazab HaMishamu from burial for so many years? The answer is that the reason we bury a person quickly is for the sake of his kavod. If, for his honor, it's necessary to leave him stay another day, it is permissible to keep a person from burial for a day. For example, if a man's children are not in town, they'll arrive a day later, or important officials, great rabbis, will come a day later, you're allowed to keep a body for an additional day. Here, the entire purpose of detaining his burial was because of his kavod. He might be buried without kavod. His kavod was so high a degree that to him, waiting for 20 years approximately was worth delaying for the sake of seeing that his kavuda burial was with kavod. During that time, he was placed in this upstairs room. His wife would visit him continually, and she found that he was completely preserved, just as in life. In fact, the Gemara says that she would comb his hair to see that he was in perfect order. One day, she noticed a tiny worm at the tip of his ear, and she became aghast at this. Is something wrong? That night, he spoke to her in her dream and said to her, don't worry about this. The reason that you saw this was a punishment for me, because one day I heard a rabbi being insulted and I protested strongly, but not strongly enough. Because I did not rise up and protest strongly enough, therefore this was the token of my punishment. Otherwise, he said, have no fear, don't worry at all about me. Now, there was a gain to all this. Yemeda says that every time people had problems, especially in litigation, one person would sue another, a court case, they would come to the Bilazar Bebi Shimon's house, they would stand downstairs, each person would state his side, explain his side, and they'd hear a voice from the attic saying, this person is right, this one is guilty, this one should pay so much. The laws were given according to the Torah from above. During the entire time, all these years, the city where he was lying was completely protected from any harm, any violent harm of wild animals. Completely protected. Finally, one day it happened after this number of years that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's wife had an argument with her neighbor, and this neighbor woman, in order to offend her, to insult her, said, I wish you'd be like your husband, not to merit being buried, not to ever get the burial. And the rabbis heard about this, so they said, this is too much. Certainly not fit to have these words said about the Elazar Rabbi Shimon. If ordinary people are saying this, then it's certainly too insulting for his kavod. It's time that we did something about burying him. In addition, at that time, the rabbis then all had the same dream. In their dream, they saw Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, who approached them and said, I have one treasure among you. I left this treasure with you for so long. Why don't you bring this treasure back to me? Back to me means that Bishurim Yechayezel is buried in a cave in Midon. He was Nistalik on Lag BaOmer. He was buried in this cave, and the cave was kept vacant. No one else could be buried there. At last now, he demanded of them they bury him, and it was understood that he should be buried next to his father in that same cave, especially since they had both spent 13 years together during their lifetime in the cave in the city of Pekin, which made both of them so great. Bishurim Yechayezel reached his greatness in that cave in Pekin for 13 years. So now they decided to bury the Bitnazar ben Rabbi Shimon. The people of that city struck against this, and they said, "We'll stop you with every power we have, because we know if you remove his body from among us, will invite trouble, suffering. As long as he was with us, we were safe. The rabbis could do nothing against these people until Erev Yom Kippur, when everyone was so busy preparing the meal, that special last meal before Kippur, they were so occupied, the rabbis stole in, took the body of Lazar ben Shimon, and they brought him to the funeral to Midon. When they came to the cave, they saw a large giant serpent that had encircled the entire cave, blocking the opening to the cave. The rabbi said to the serpent, they spoke to the serpent, they weren't frightened by it, they knew this serpent wasn't a normal serpent. They said to the serpent, "Serpent, open your mouth, let the son enter to his father." The serpent immediately opened up, they entered, they buried Lazar ben Shimon there. The reason for this serpent is, this was to hint to them the greatness of Lazar ben Shimon, that they had thought, some had suspected them of doing wrong. The serpent is the symbol, is the minister, that there were certain people, four people in history, who had died for no sin at all on their part. They never committed a sin or a crime in their lifetime. The only reason they died was because of the act of the serpent with Adam and Ishon and Chava, because he had misled Chava, and she in turn to Adam, and eating from the tree of wisdom, therefore this brought death to the world, because the serpent then became the Satan. As the Zohar Kadosh says, the word Nachash, serpent, is Begimetria Satan, with the Kolel. The Satan, the Gemara says in Mabatra, is the Malach HaMavet, the angel of death. So the serpent then became the angel of death. And because of this serpent's act, therefore, certain people died without sin, only because of this, the talk, the act on the part of the serpent. The serpent here showed, Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon too, was that pure. He had no sin for which to die. It was only because of the original act of the serpent which brought death to the world, and no person can escape death. Now that's why when they said to the serpent, "Open up," the serpent, the Satan, opened immediately, because he was beneath the rule of Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon. The case told in the Zohar Kadosh, where that the Yitzchak, one of the students of Bishurim Yechayezel, had seen his impending death. And he came to the Bishurim Yechayezel, and when he came to his door, the Bishurim said, "I see behind you the angel of death lurking, waiting for that moment he's supposed to take you." So he said to him, "Come into my tent, my home, go through this door, and I hereby decree that only you can come in and no one else," which means the angel of death is locked out. This was the power of Rav Shimon Yechayezel. That's how he saved his life, and he lived for many more years, Yitzchak. Here, because Rav Shimon Yechayezel, in this day in this cave, had risen to such great heights, that he and his son were both greater than the angel of death, the serpent here served as a protection against anyone else entering into this cave, so that To this day, no one but the Mishumi Chayazal and his son, Mazabim Shimonzal, are buried in that cave. And that's why to this day, too, it's considered, perhaps, or by many certainly, the holiest spot of all of Eretz Yisrael. To go visit this cave, to pray there, and this aura of holiness, and the zechut of these great tzaddikim, many a person has been helped that his prayers were completely answered. The main thing we should be zocheh to fulfill our duty in having implicit emunah in these great tzaddikim, because only the zechut of emunah will we merit seeing the coming of Mashiach, Yom Bet HaMikdash, the return of all of Bnei Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, Behera, Amen, V'Amen.
Amen.